Hello everyone, welcome to Concurrent Session 3D. I'm your chair for the session. I'm Jim Welsh. By day I'm the Claims Reporting Insights and Analytics Manager at AMP, and by night I'm the chair of VALUCA, the Australasian Life Underwriting Claims Association, so no pressure, boys. Today's session is Keep Your Eye on the Prize and Foot on the Pedal by Philip Halverson and Brendan Jones. So Philip is the director in EY's Actuarial Services team, specialising in general insurance. A qualified actuary, Philip has a range of experience across both the corporate and government insurance sectors. Philip is currently the scheme actuary for the workers' comp arm of CERA, the New South Wales State Insurance Regulatory Authority. This is a broad advisory role looking at a range of risks and policy options for the regulator to respond to experience as it emerges from the New South Wales scheme. Philip has an interest in utilising the rich data available in workers' compensation to help improve scheme outcomes. Brendan's a manager in EY Actuarial Services team. Brendan has worked in a consulting, providing advisory services to the public and private sector for over 10 years. Brendan has been a part of EY's GI Actuarial team for almost 3 years. Brendan has supported Philip in his role with CERA and has also worked on a review of other long-tailed personal injury portfolios. Brendan is motivated to make the best use of the available data and techniques to achieve better outcomes for individuals in parallel with improved overall performance of injury schemes. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Must apologise if you're sitting here wondering what it is exactly we're going to talk about, because neither Brendan nor I know where the title of this presentation came from. However, We set out with a reasonably straightforward idea was to have a look across the market at how data analytics are being used to monitor or improve scheme performance. Seems simple. We made a couple of mistakes, I think. We didn't define data analytics, and I think that's probably a pretty known refrain for all of us here. And secondly, we didn't define performance. What do we actually mean by scheme performance? And although we muddled our way through and we think we've come up with some pretty valuable insights, I think those two themes actually kept repeating themselves throughout this whole exercise. So what is it we actually did? So we ended up holding about a dozen 1 hour or thereabouts in-depth interviews with various players in the market. Combination of big schemes, self-insurers, regulators and private underwriters. To everyone that participated, I must say a massive thank you. Everyone was incredibly generous with their time, but also very open and very honest about what they're doing, what the roadblocks are, and the troubles and bumps they're having along the way. Anyone that we did reach out to that we didn't get to, I must apologise. Time got the better of us. And for those that chose not to participate, it's probably best I just move on, I think. So what did we find? We didn't find this. No one out there is willfully ignorant of the power of their data that they have and the ability and potential that some form of data analytics can do. So everyone's out there at the moment trying to do the best with the resources and the skills that they've got. So what did we find? This was a little bit of a last-minute thought, but actually turned out quite valuable that we just threw all our notes into a word cloud to see what would pop out. And it's actually pretty insightful in that claims data was clearly the main focus, and even further, what we would call the claims header file, that snapshot data at the high level, was where most people were concentrating their effort. There was a lot of work going on around reporting and around monitoring. There was a reasonable degree of buy-in from the board, and there was very broad understanding of the word analytics, and it was used in a lot of different senses. What we didn't hear much of, and what some people only barely touched on, was a very structured linkage between why they're doing monitoring and what the objectives are of their organisation. And we will come back to this towards the end. But firstly, Brendan will just go through a bit more detail of what we found, and then we'll move on from there.
Thanks, Phil. So I'll talk through the current state, which is a snapshot of what we found out from all these interviews that we conducted with the industry. So in summary, what we found, as Phil mentioned, is that everyone is engaged in this field. Everyone's interested in getting data-driven insights to improve their business and to be more efficient in what they do. With that interest, there's still a range of capacity and capability in what they're doing. Some are at the start of this journey, some are at the end. They're fairly mature on the journey. From that spectrum, we can see that the ones who are at the mature end have made a significant investment. It has by no means been an easy win for them, and it was quite a story of a long story of how they've gotten to where they are today. Specifically, we haven't found that big data has been a big part of what's been done to date, so potentially that's somewhere that the industry can move forward, going forward. So anecdotally, the investment in the data side of things was probably a harder sell than what the investment in the analytics capacity has been. So the actuarial data is pretty good. It's been used. It's reliable. It's robust. We found that it's been used, so it's got that robustness. But now that looking to get additional insights from the rest of the data, it's been found that there's been some challenges there. So I think one of the keynote speakers this morning talked about language as being part of their ways of identifying how to engage in the initial claim management. And we found an insurer who's gone back and looked at that language data and found that it hasn't been used. It's actually not that good. So the investment to go back and make that data more robust and to get agents or insurers to go and put more rigor around that recording of data is required, but it's a bit of a harder sell. And of course, the accessibility and accuracy of the data is the precondition to any of this work. It has to be good. It has to be timely and available in time to make some actions. That's an important part of it. We touched briefly on technology. I think what we found was that it's not really a limit currently, that the bigger limit is around finding the right use of technology. So from our discussion, we tried to put some definition around data analytics and put together this kind of maturity framework. It's not to say that everyone should be at the far end as mature as they can be on every single issue. This is how we saw maturity increase, and as we moved across to the right, the number of people doing it probably dropped off a little bit. So starting ingestion, that includes collecting and cleansing the data, we didn't really delve into that any further. But the first step of analytics is kind of reporting, so collecting that data and summarising it into a bit of a time series, and pretty much everyone was doing that in some way. And similarly with monitoring, the distinction we made between reporting and monitoring was that the monitoring involved some degree of threshold or benchmark that defined that the current performance is adequate or is in line with where you'd expect it to be. So examples, reporting, I guess, are the periodic management reports that everyone will be familiar with of average claim size and claim frequencies. And for monitoring, it might be something like tracking return to work performance or financial performance against an actuarial expectation, as an example. So the next two, analytics and predictive analytics, are where we started to see a bit less consistency across the market. So for analytics, the distinction we make here is that there's the question mark sort of highlights that you're looking for a reason behind the movement. It's not just there's a movement, it's why has the movement been that way? And digging down into the data and trying to find that cause. And with that, can you address the cause to get some actionable insights and change the outcome? And for predictive analytics, I think John Nagle actually gave an interesting example of this in the keynote this morning, where he talked about what are the elements of a claim that would suggest that you should manage it in a certain way. He gave the example of the man on the North Coast who's of a certain age, and that's those two and a few others were indicators that claim is likely to be a severe and a long-term claim. And that's an example where we see predictive analytics coming into play. And we probably didn't find a lot of examples of those, but John's was probably a good one. So talking about how people are using these, I suppose, in practice and the roadblocks that they've found that came about through our interviews, I think for both of these, everyone's doing it in some way. The roadblocks for reporting are pretty much around data, and if it's there and it's available, then people are generally reporting on it in some way. For monitoring, I guess the additional challenge is around actually identifying those appropriate KPIs that line up with good scheme performance. It might sound simple, but I don't think it necessarily is a direct flow through from having the data available. So the next point around analytics and predictive analytics, this is where, as I said, the use of it started to drop off a little bit in practice. So everyone saw the value, it seemed. As Phil said, everyone was highly engaged in the area. Everyone's either doing it, and there's some isolated initiatives, there's a few who are doing it on a day-to-day basis, it's informing their management. There are a few others who identified as it's an aspiration they've got planned for, and some others who thought there was value within the scheme for it to be done, but maybe belonged in a different area of the scheme than their personal or than their own business. So the value in moving up from a monitoring framework to analytics is obviously you get to identify the root cause, and that gives you better information about the initiatives that you should be designing and implementing. The roadblocks, apart from the ones I mentioned for reporting, are around the skills. It's still a relatively new area, and where we have seen that there's data science people involved in the scheme, they're spread quite thinly. So they might be able to do the work, but then there's 10 other people lined up at their door to do a different investigation to a different area to get a different insight. And the other sort of roadblock was a bit of a walk before we run mentality. So there's a few people who thought it was a good idea, but are still working around the reporting and data side, and they haven't quite got to the point where they can get confident in making this investment to go to the next step. So for predictive analytics, again, the step up in value is around making the most out of investments that are made in, more advanced claims management, and identifying those claims that will benefit from whichever intervention it may be. And the roadblocks around actually framing the right question, understanding how and when to use predictive analytics as opposed to some of the others, just basic analytics or reporting or monitoring, I think that's still a new kind of concept that isn't quite embedded yet. So after going through that, we looked to see if we could identify some common themes that have hampered sort of effective management, effective analysis, the role of effective analysis. And these are a couple that we came up with. So the first was around losing focus of what you're actually trying to achieve. So we've seen that some of the monitoring that's in place has been put in place because the data's come up from the bottom. You've analysed that data, you've monitored that data, and this is what you can tell us. Because the data's told you that, that's where you end up. Rather than looking at what are the scheme objectives, what do I need out of the data to tell me if I'm achieving those objectives, and how can I focus my effort in that way? The other one is getting the right balance within the organisation as to what level of analysis you should do on a certain issue, and will that drive improved outcomes, and will the balance of investment and outcome be what you'd hope for. I'll hand back to Phil now on what we saw as a bit of a way forward on claims management.
Thanks, Brendan. So we'll go back to our pyramid, and we thought, how would we approach this if we had a blank piece of paper to go forward? As Brendan said, what we heard and how we interpreted it, and if we didn't ask the right questions and we've got it wrong, we apologise, but it certainly seemed to be a bottom-up approach. We know we've got all this data. We can get hold of it. We've got some great tools. We can analyse that data, and we can bash out some KPIs. We saw very little linkage between that and what would be the management objectives or even the regulator's objectives for the scheme. So our hypothesis is it should be the other way around, and it should be top down. So the entity should clearly articulate its objectives. What does good actually look like for these schemes? What is a good outcome actually mean? And then to define how you're going to ensure that you're on track to achieve that performance. We'll come back to the regulator because we think the regulator can play a similar role. But once you have the why, the rest can trickle down. If you understand why, then you can design the what. What am I going to monitor to make sure I know I'm going to achieve my objectives? A lot of people are doing monitoring. A lot of people had time series and trends and thought something was going up or something was going down. Not many people could tell us if that was good or bad. Is it inside what we expected or outside what we expected? Do I actually need to act or not? So this was the missing piece, as we saw it. Then when you have the what, you can decide on the how, which techniques you're going to use, and is your data then fit for purpose to do that? Slightly different way of looking at it, but very similar. So starting from the top left-hand quadrant, defining your objectives, identifying what good actually means, and then turning that into meaningful KPIs that have defined benchmarks and thresholds. What actions will you then take if those KPIs are not being met? And it's a little bit like a general insurance ICAAP process, where general insurers now have to have defined actions in place if their capital positions are getting out of whack with what they've specified. That's not what we're seeing within these schemes at the moment. You can then decide on what's the appropriate course of action and what's the best way to actually analyse where you're trying to head. And predictive analytics might not be the answer. You might not always need the Ferrari to get on the commute on the way to work. Okay. So, but if you're following that top-down approach, you can make that informed decision. So this is just a very brief example that I'll only quickly run through, but how this might work. If you had an objective around viability, for example, what would be one measure of viability for workers' compensation would be to ensure that you're collecting the amount of premium that you need. So you might decide you need to assess premium leakage, and that's your why. Okay? And then what? How are you going to do that? Monitor the accuracy of your wages and associated industry classifications, and so on and so forth. This was the one area, and we used this example on purpose, that when we said to people, using other sources of data, not many were, but everyone sort of quoted this as this will be their next step to access data from the ATO or Office of State Revenue to do this sort of analysis. So that's sort of indication of the level of maturity of where we're at the moment. I'm not going to go through that. It's too many words. It's just more examples of the same thing. The regulator, I think, can play a quite important role in that the objectives of most of these schemes are actually enshrined in the enabling legislation. They're not always clear-cut. They use words like efficiency and effectiveness and sustainability, not things that are immediately obvious what that means or how it could be turned into a metric that you can measure. And quite a number of them actually balance against each other. So there's inherent tension between a lot of those objectives. But I think the regulator can play a role in helping to define what those objectives actually mean. And if they do that in quite a transparent way and say, this is how we're going to monitor our scheme, then I think the insurers within the scheme have to buy into that, because that's going to be out there in the public arena. And if there's thresholds placed around those metrics, everyone will have transparency around if that's being achieved or not being achieved. I said to Brendan, I think we need a slide around blue sky thinking. He's done a great job. No, sorry, it's not true. This is in workers' compensation, especially. I think it applies to all personal injury schemes, but workers' compensation in particular is data rich. It's got so much data, millions of records of not just claims data but transactional data and underlying data. So this was mentioned, I think, just before lunch. We've almost got full treatment records for hundreds of thousands of claims. Can we analyse that to actually decide what's the most effective treatment for certain injury types. Can we identify through the data what friction points are in the system that are actually causing people more grief than is actually helping them to get better? Okay. I'm going to sum it up. Because we're running up against afternoon tea and you're at the back of a two-hour block, I thought I'd do this a little bit differently. I had a small break in my career about 9 years where I went and made wine. And sometimes I put that in a box of my life and say it's not relevant to what I'm doing now. And other times I sort of look in that box and think, yeah, actually I can learn some lessons from that. So that's actually my wine label. A little bit nostalgic when I found that. When you start to make a wine, you don't go out and pick some grapes and bring them into the winery. You first have a very clear idea of what it is you're going to make before you do anything else. That is the number one priority is, where am I going? Then you start cleaning. If anyone ever had any illusions about the romanticism of winemaking, forget it. 80% of a bottle of wine is cleaning. Because it's very well recognised, you get rubbish in, you get rubbish out. And I think everyone knows what I mean. The data has to be clean, has to be usable. Okay? Once we start in the winery, we analyse and monitor every single day, multiple times a day, a number of parameters that are in conflict with each other. You need a certain amount of acid that has to balance a certain amount of sugar, that has to balance a certain amount of alcohol, that has to keep your preservatives in a certain range. Otherwise, you're going to end up with vinegar at the end of the process. Those thresholds around that are very well defined. And if something steps out of that threshold, you have to act. If you don't act and just hope that next day you come and do your reading and it will be something different, you're going to end up with vinegar at the end of the process. When you have to take a corrective action, you don't take a corrective action on 100,000 litre of a tank of wine without actually doing a trial first. You test a little bit. Does that work? Is that the result I wanted? And you test some more. We do all that for a $25 bottle of wine. We're talking about real people that have been injured at work or in motor accidents through no fault of their own, and I think we can start to get a bit more value out of our data. So happy to take any questions.
Just with the questions, can we please use the microphones and introduce ourselves, because the session's been recorded. That said, with my question, I probably wish it wasn't recorded. There's the old adage that predictive analytics and big data are like teenagers with sex. Everyone says they're doing it, but no one actually is. There seems to be a block between reporting and monitoring and analytics and predictive analytics. So in the survey, did you see companies that have got through that block well, and how did they do it, and how did they do it quickly?
It's in an ad hoc manner, Jim, I think. We certainly found people, as Brendan said, up at that right-hand end of the spectrum. I don't think it's done in a structured way. There are often people sitting in an analytics function that might be servicing other parts of the business as well, and as Brendan said, they've got multiple demands on their time. A lot of them said it wasn't an easy journey to get to where they are. In convincing management that they could deliver real value, it's taken a long time.
Do we have any other questions? Because I've got quite a few. All right, excellent.
Thanks, guys, for the presentation. I just had just around the whole top-down approach, thought that occurred to me is you might have a portfolio of claims where part of the portfolio is actually really underperforming. It's offset by another part that's actually doing pretty well. And if you take that top-down approach, you might not actually pick it up early enough, just looking at the higher-level KPIs, yep. In which case you need something that actually looks up. Yep. From the bottom up,
yep.
Because you don't necessarily see the problem right at the start, and it's a bit of that iceberg thing where you might see a little thing but might be something big underneath.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's still merit in doing a bit of both. Just a bit of a, you know, devil's advocate there, but
no. I would agree. I think we painted a pretty broad brush picture. Absolutely, understanding the segmentations within that data is crucial. New South Wales has a great example within the public sector that they've got certain portfolio under one set of legislation, a certain portfolio under a separate set of legislation that behave completely differently. So that would be an obvious example where what you're saying is quite true. If you looked at it holistically, you might think everything's rosy, but underneath it's not the case. But yeah, I would agree with that.
Hi guys, Catherine Gobby, EM Life. You don't happen to have another slide that shows us all charted on our maturity, do you? Because I'd love to see it, even if it was de-identified, just to see where we're at, because I think that I imagine we're all sitting here going, yeah, that was years ago, that was a year, we're probably right up the far right, but I'd love to know, as an industry, if we are.
Do you want to put it up there?
Recording off.
Most, that would be the average, somewhere in there. A lot of people said they're doing monitoring, and when you dug a bit deeper, some, I think Brendan mentioned it, were monitoring against an actuarial valuation. So taking an extract from that valuation on a quarterly basis and monitoring against that, I think is fantastic. But on top of that, in terms of actually monitoring against something, as to try and determine if what you're seeing is good or bad, it's not really there. So it's sporadic up that end of
it. Daniel Keating from Comcare. I think a lot of people probably familiar with the cost difficulties for this. If cost wasn't an issue, I think everyone would be at the far right of the spectrum. So interested for those people who had responded saying, you know, they'd made some progress but it had been hard won or costly, were you able to gain any insights about whether that was perceived within their organisation as having been valuable?
Yeah, a little bit, Daniel. I think with a couple of the interviews, what we found was there was, I'll just say it, there was more attention put on the underwritten portfolio where it was the insurer's own capital versus if it was a managed fund that they were a scheme agent for. So they were able to demonstrate for that portfolio that they were going to have a cost benefit for management, and they got buy-in through that. Is there anything else?
I guess the other thing would be that if there has been success here, it's come from the top down. It hasn't been a case of someone making an individual business case and getting it up from the bottom. It's been a board level decision to go along the path of data and insights, and it's taken some time up that to make it. But that's where we've seen success, is that it's been a CEO, a board, a chief actuary who's instigated it and driven it through.
I think the only other thing I would add on top of that is actually some of what the self-insurers are doing is really great stuff, and they were able to demonstrate that they could get better outcomes through certain analysis to management, and because that meant that they got people back to work quicker or whatever the case was, and that was had a more immediate impact on the business, that was more effective.
I'm going to ask a question again, sorry. So the right-hand side, the analytics, predictive analytics, obviously has been a great deal of advances there in recent times, and what we can do quickly now compared to what we could do that 10 years ago is, you know, fantastic. Has data quality improved?
Most of the bigger schemes that we spoke to said that's still the biggest issue. Data quality is still the biggest issue. And as Brendan said, the actuarial fields, the payment type fields, the date type fields are good. When you get towards some of the other fields that you might be interested in. I know in New South Wales, like things like whole person impairment assessment fields are more problematic. So there's problems with data still. Yeah.
And I guess my follow-on question from that, so this only counts as 2B, so it's still two questions. So how do effective companies balance data issues and data cleansing without having to do 3 months of data cleansing before experience reviews, and balancing that with speed of information and timeliness of information?
So the ones that we see being sort of at the mature end, they have spent a long time on the data processing and getting it as automated as possible, as reliable as possible, straight out of the system. So they're not spending that 2 or 3 weeks every month making the data that they use usable. So there's probably still other data that's not so good, but the data they use, they've got to a point where they can get it in a day or two. So that's kind of a precondition for progressing along here, is that you have that data being accessible, so timely, effective, and accurate, I suppose. It's the data they can rely on is coming out in a couple of days, and it's improving that way.
Yeah, I would agree that most people going for small wins, I think they were picking data fields they thought they could get value on, not the whole claim file, and cleaning that data up as they went. Not sure if that answers your question.
No, it does. Thank you. And do we have any other questions? In that case, we'll release you 5 minutes early. Thank you, Philip and Brendan, and a small token of our appreciation.
Thanks, Jim. Cheers.